Collegiately Speaking.
Walks into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Punches to the end zone.
Touchdown.
This is Collegiately Speaking with the voice of Northwestern football and basketball, Dave Enning, and former Northwestern star quarterback, Dan Persa. It's Collegiately Speaking. Let's go.
And welcome to another edition of Collegiately Speaking. Dave Ennett, joined by former Wildcat quarterback Dan Persa. The Northwestern Wildcats pulled off really an amazing comeback win Saturday night. I don't toss those terms around lightly, but you don't have a whole lot going. You're down 21-0 in a game. You're down 24-7 at halftime, and still down by 21 points at the start of the fourth quarter and end up tying the game with 2 seconds to go in regulation and winning it in overtime. By the way, your first snap of overtime. Dan, I've done a lot of overtime games over the years. Northwestern used to have a habit. I remember 1 year played 3 weeks in a row, played overtime, won them all. I think that was in 2018. And I don't think there's ever been a game where their first play from scrimmage in OT was the game winner.
No, and I think you kind of felt after Minnesota got the field goal that Northwestern was going to go for the jugular and just try to win it right away because they had all the momentum, and it was a great play call. A play action to a throwback to the tight end that always works. So credit Coach Jake and the Cats for figuring that one out. But I think as a former player, it was just good to see that comeback. Frankly, it was kind of a throwback Northwestern win from, you know, the 2010s and before, right, where the kids never quit. They kept playing. You know, that fourth and one where the Minnesota running back, you know, broke a tackle and ran for a touchdown, you really thought that was a nail in the coffin, but they didn't quit. So you got to give them a ton of credit. And these are the types of games that build confidence in the offense and defense, and everybody made plays at the end of the day, which was fun to watch.
I've been asked by a couple of people what changed, what turned this game around, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint one specific thing. I do think if you go back to the second half and the beginning of the second half and the third quarter, remember Minnesota got the ball first to start the third quarter of play, and at that point, Minnesota was up 24-7, and Minnesota came out, and they have a chance. And we saw this against Duke, where the Cats were down at halftime. Duke came out, scored the first two times they had the ball in the third quarter, and the game was over. In this case, Minnesota, which is having a lot of success running the ball with their terrific freshman Darius Taylor, they come out and they threw the ball, didn't try to run it at all, but they got one first down. And then after that, three straight incomplete, or one, there was one run, I think, by the quarterback, and they ended up punting. And to me, it really showed a kind of a change in their approach to the game. And Northwestern didn't cash in on that right away, but they eventually did get a field goal on the ensuing drive, and that kind of got them going a little bit.
You just never know, right? And I think that's what the kids need to believe in. You never know what one drive means, one play means. You got to keep playing, because at the end of the day, you can score three straight drives and the other team, and you can get three straight stops. It's not that out of the question, but people think a 21-point deficit is this unsurmountable lead. It's really not, right? Especially in college football, and with how quick these folks can score, and they showed on the last drive, even though there were a couple times where I was kind of clenching my teeth, holding my breath when you're checking the ball down in the middle of the field, getting tackled and let the clock run. And then Thomas Gordon, you know, kind of darting back inside and then back barely getting out of bounds. There were a couple, you know, good breaks that Northwestern got, but they kept playing and making plays. And that last touchdown throw before overtime that Ben Bryant did was textbook, right? The previous play, they threw a fade to the right side, and you know, that Minnesota was getting towards double coverage, and he knew that, you know, they were probably thinking the same thing because they didn't have a ton of time, so it had to be a shot to the end zone. So he looked the safety off right to the fade, and then came back to AJ Henning and delivered a shot, right? And it was a great throw, great execution top to bottom, and then you know, that quick play in overtime sealed the deal. So it was just fun to watch. I think Ben Bryant is really a gunslinger at heart, and I think he took advantage of that second half. My one worry is just the running game, right? Establishing that is going to be important. You can't always play like that. And when you're down 21, you're playing against defenses that are a lot softer. That isn't you know, kind of consistent throughout the game. So you still want to see the offense be more balanced at the end of the day, especially in the Big Ten West as it gets colder. But it was fun to watch, fun to see. And like I said, it was really like a throwback Cats win, in my opinion.
No doubt. The old cardiac Cats. Ben Bryant, who transferred to Northwestern from Cincinnati, played at Cincinnati, then Eastern Michigan, then back to Cincinnati last year, and now playing back at home because he's from this area, from Lions. So he is one of four Northwestern quarterbacks since 2000. I don't know if you know this, to record 800 or more passing yards with six or more touchdown passes in the first four games of the season. Can you name any of the other three?
Sorry, say that again. What's the stat line?
Four Northwestern quarterbacks since 2000. Ben is the fourth to record 800 or more passing yards, six or more touchdown passes in the first four games of a season.
It's probably Baz, right?
Nope.
CJ Beshear, maybe.
Nope.
Am I on that list?
You are on
that list. maybe Kafka?
No. How about this? Here's the list. I won't keep you in suspense any longer. Clayton Thorson in 2017, Zach Kustak in 2001, and Dan Person 2010. And by the way, you had eight touchdown passes and the second most yards behind Thorson in that span, and also the fewest interceptions.
Got one interception. There
so,
you go.
Congratulations. That's pretty good group to be a part of, but. Certainly seeing not only the passing of Bryant, but also how about his connection with Bryce Kurtz?
Well, I think it's something that Wildcat fans have been waiting on. And unfortunately, Bryce has just been injured pretty much his whole career. I think he's had, four or five knee surgeries and never really got on track. And he was always one of those older guys that would always make plays when he was in there. But I think because he had 215 in the game, I think that was more than he's had in a season previously, which is, I mean, that's a huge, huge accomplishment for him. So hopefully he can stay healthy and him and AJ and the rest of the receivers can continue that connection because it was fun to watch.
Well, let's go back to Saturday night.
First down. Here's Bryant. Rolls right. Looking now, throwing downfield, wide open, caught, Mangieri, touchdown, the Wildcats win! Charlie Mangieri, all by himself, touchdown Northwestern, and the Wildcats have stunned the Gophers in overtime.
I don't know why that guy was so excited. I mean, it's not like, you know, don't teams come back, Dan, from down 21 points in the fourth quarter? Every week and pull off great comeback wins like that.
It happens. It happens. It's always good to see it happen, though.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dave Ennett, Dan Persa, pleased to welcome the guy who caught that pass that we were describing on Saturday night against the Minnesota Golden Gophers, number 89 of the Wildcats, Charlie Mangieri. Charlie, thanks for joining us. I think we talked to you on the show a couple of years ago in much different circumstances. You've been through an awful lot, and I've just got to think that moment had to be certainly one of the highlights of your time in Evanston, if not the highlight. How would you sum it up?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys.
It's
a pleasure. But, definitely been through a lot, especially last year going through an ACL injury and kind of recovering from that. It kind of just came full circle in that moment, and it kind of just everything led up to there. But definitely a lot more work to do leading up to Penn State this week at a tough opponent. So looking forward to that now.
How much of a lift, though, did that win give not just you, not just the offense, but the entire team?
Yeah, definitely a major lift. You're always looking for that one burst of energy to kind of give you some confidence, give you some swagger within the offense, within the defense, within the whole team. I think that win, especially coming down 21-0, kind of shows that we can be a great team, and as long as everybody plays complimentary football. Huge lift off the shoulders, being 2-2, and then 1-0 in the Big Ten West. Everything's right in front of us right now.
Charlie, Dan Persa here. Thanks again for joining us. I think as fans from the outside looking in, it seems like one of the, you know, from a skill position standpoint, one of the more talented groups that Northwestern's had in a long time, probably in your career as well. Do you agree with that? And maybe talk a little bit about how the talent has finally come together, especially in that second half.
For sure. Yeah. I think our skill position is definitely one of the betters I've been around in the tight end room, wide receivers, running back room. I mean, everywhere. I mean, I think a big reason for that is that we're an older group, especially in the skill position, whether that be transfers or just guys who have been here the whole time. So we've been able to gel together and kind of work off of each other and kind of know what everybody's going to be doing, especially with Coach Jake's offense. He's been here for 4 years, and we've all been working through it since the start of COVID. So, you know, it's kind of stuff like that, helping us gel together and then bringing the new guys along, the transfers, to kind of get them on pace and work with them. So, yeah, it's been fun.
What do you think was the main difference in the second half versus, you know, the first half and, frankly, the previous couple games?
Yeah, I think, honestly, Coach Braun, I'm sure you guys have heard this the whole time, but he's been preaching just to find our edge. So I think that was a big thing. But looking back at, like, a physical moment that burst that, I think it had to have been Bryce Kurtz and Ben Bryant, that one drive where they just did it themselves. You know, that's kind of something we're like, okay, we can score, and we can score fast, and we can do this all year. So I think that was a big turning point, not only in that game, but honestly in the whole season coming forward.
Charlie, what's the transition been like for you adjusting to playing for a new head coach when you had played for one guy for 5 years and you probably hadn't had a whole lot of dealings with David Braun at the time he was elevated to the interim head coaching job?
Yeah, you know, it seems like it would be like a kind of a tough situation. Obviously, I miss Coach Fitz. I love him. He's done so much for me and my family. But I think Coach Braun has done a great job to make a seamless transition. Obviously, some things are different. Some things have stayed the same. But in the grand scheme of things, he's done a great job to just keep everything seamless and make sure that nothing really changes within this year.
We're talking with Charlie Mangere, tight end. For the Wildcats, caught the game-winning touchdown pass from Ben Bryant Saturday night to beat Minnesota. I should say former superback, because that's that's how long you've been there. You came in as a superback in 2018, and I know you've told this story a number of times. We've probably asked you about it before, but if there is a guy with a legacy either in college football, college athletics, or at Northwestern, you kind of cover the whole gamut there. Two brothers who played college football, another brother who played baseball, two uncles who played at Northwestern. Give us the quick family tree, Charlie.
Yeah. So you knocked it right in the head right there. Oldest brother, PJ, played at Nebraska as a long snapper. Nick, the second oldest, played at Indiana as a defensive end. And then Luke played at Bradley, also got drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And actually just finished his baseball career with the Chicago Dogs. And then my two older uncles, Uncle Eddie, Uncle Danny, both played at Northwestern. Danny played with Fitz on the Rose Bowl team. So, you know, it's been great kind of just learning from them, competing with my brothers like pretty much every single day when I grew up until they left for college. So a lot of learning opportunities from each and every one of them, and a lot of things to be grateful for.
Yeah, I had the good fortune to broadcast games with both of your uncles were playing. Both Eddie, who was could punt, he did a little of everything for the Cats back in the early 90s. And, of course, Danny, as you mentioned, a terrific player on that great defense they had on that 95 team that went out to Pasadena. I'm sure they've told you a lot of those stories about those days.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. My parents did so too. I mean, they were traveling and watching those well, but unfortunately, I wasn't alive.
Yeah, exactly.
Charlie, maybe talk a little bit about Coach Jenick. He's a guy that I think has a lot of different experiences, being a head coach, position coach, a couple stops at Northwestern, and a really senior coach, frankly. And maybe talk a little bit about how he's helped in your development, and especially through some of these tougher times of the last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's kind of coach who lets you really play free. He doesn't really try and get too much in your head with like footwork and stuff like that. The tight end position can be pretty complex doing run blocking and route running. So his kind of philosophy is kind of less stuff in your head and more so like lets you to run free, play free, as long as you're in the right spots and the right gaps and doing what you're supposed to be doing. So he's been really helpful in that point. And then I got to give a shout out to my older coach, Coach Hess, but he was more so technique. So kind of just getting like a mesh between both of them has really helped me flourish as a tight end.
When you were on our post game Saturday night and you were talking to Ted Albrecht and you mentioned that and this was right after the game, you said you already had like 100 text messages. How many did you end up with, and who did you hear from who was the most surprising?
Nobody too surprising, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like Coach Fitz hit me up. That's not too surprising. I mean, we've been having conversations, but yeah, nothing too surprising. I'd say it was probably stuck around 100 messages. I'm not too sure.
That's still a lot in a short period of time. Well,
that's right.
Charlie, congratulations on a terrific, certainly a terrific career and a great accomplishment Saturday night, and a lot of work still to be done. And you know, this Penn State team's coming in here with a lot of momentum, but I'm sure they got to be looking at what you guys did and say, oh, this isn't going to be maybe the cakewalk that people would have predicted or if they'd looked at it a few weeks ago early in the season.
Yeah, you know, they're a good ball club. Hopefully we put out some good stuff on film. You know, it's 11 a.m. game, so we love cat time. Let's hope we get a good fan base showing up. Look forward to a great game against Penn State, you know.
No doubt. Charlie, appreciate your time. Stay healthy, and good luck this Saturday and the rest of the season. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks. Take care. All right, good to visit with Charlie Mangieri. Really remarkable. He alluded to this at the beginning, Dan, but he tried to play in 2022. I think it was the game at Penn State in the rain where he went out there and had a knee injury and tried to play through it and got out there and just realized he couldn't and opted to come back. He's a sixth-year guy, and obviously you get some experience in that room, which is a pretty loaded room anyway with guys like Thomas Gordon and Marshall Lang, who got dinged up on Saturday a couple of times, got hurt. Some other guys, Duke Olgis, who moved over from defense and has contributed, especially as a blocker. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that Charlie stuck it out. Now he gets certainly the biggest individual moment of his career.
Yeah, it's been very fun to watch. And you mentioned it, right? He's seen a lot since 2018, ups and downs at Northwestern. And to your point, I think Coach Janik has a great tight end room. I think he mentioned that Duke Olgis was probably one of the better blockers, if not the best blocker as a tight end in the Big Ten, which is obviously a serious statement. And then the other guys that you talked about, Marshall, Charlie, and Thomas Gordon are great players, right? So I think it's important to have a strong tight end room, especially in Coach Jake's offense where they try to involve the tight ends and have a great running game.
How do you look at the Big Ten West right now? Because, I mean, we know that one of the powers from the Big Ten East is coming in this week in Penn State. You look at the West, seems like everybody has had their struggles and everybody's had their good moments, too. I mean, certainly Minnesota, their opener against Nebraska, they looked good. Nebraska is certainly continuing to struggle, even though they got a win this week. And Illinois, not quite sure what to make of them yet. Same can be said, I guess, of some of the other teams in that division.
I think it's right. I think every team is still trying to figure it out. I would say Wisconsin's probably the top team in my mind thus far, but again, it's still really early. They had a good win against Purdue. Purdue, Illinois, and even Iowa are still trying to figure out their identity. So it's wide open, and I think a lot can change over the next couple of weeks, but you'll find out in October who the main contenders are and who's coming into form and who's not. But I think the great thing for Northwestern is it's wide open, right? Why not them at this point after that win? So we'll see. I think it'll be fun to watch and materialize.
And, of course, last year they gave Penn State a battle out there in the rain, but got some turnovers, and they were in that game, ended up losing 17-7. And now Penn State's coming in off a 31-0 thrashing of Iowa in the whiteout in State College last Saturday night. It's really remarkable. They are giving up 8.8 points a game so far this year, about 200 yards of offense. They've had some good defenses under Manny Diaz there, Dan, but looks like this could be maybe, I don't know if it's the best, but it's got to be right up there.
They look solid. I would almost say that they're playing better than Ohio State right now. I would think Michigan's probably playing the best, Penn State than Ohio State, but it's a tough test. And Coach Diaz is very experienced, obviously, from his former stops. And has those guys playing really hard. You know, the whiteout is a different animal, right? So that, that score got out of hand pretty quickly, and I don't know that it was absolutely reflective of those two teams. But I think Northwestern, as long as they can hang around and stay in the game and keep, you know, the quarterback Aller, slow them down a little bit, right? They have an explosive offense and take care of the ball, right? So as long as they don't give it away and hang around, it's a game that could be fun to watch. But at the same time, couple mistakes one way or another, and it could get away from you pretty quickly.
Yeah, no doubt about that against that team. All right, time for, as we do every week, to bring in Super Joe for his predictions.
Prediction: to say or estimate a specified thing will happen in the future.
Super Joe's predictions. Prediction.
Much appreciated, gentlemen. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to completely forget about last week's Ole Miss-Bama game where I missed the total by 3 full scores. Yikes. Let's get back to the Big Ten where we're all more comfortable. Nebraska hosts Michigan at 2:30 on Fox on Saturday. Michigan's team total is just 27.5 points. Their offense, with or without Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines, has been pretty good. They have the nation's most accurate passer with J.J. McCarthy at 79.8%. Blake Corum has rumbled into the end zone 8 times, which leads the nation. And the new number one target, Roman Wilson, has 6 touchdowns through the air. I like the Wolverines to get that 28 points and then some.
All right, so the schedule, you've got the Cats playing Penn State. You've got Illinois at Purdue. And Nebraska home against Michigan this week. Indiana plays at Maryland. Maryland looks really tough, too. You know, we talk about Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State in the East, but how about the Terrapins? Iowa back home to play Michigan State, which is really struggling. Louisiana plays at Minnesota. Rutgers hosts Wagner. And, yeah, it'll be interesting. And, of course, the evening matchup, one of the Wildcats' previous opponents, Duke, playing at home against Notre Dame, which is coming off the loss to Ohio State. Interesting matchup there. But we'll see what happens. 11 o'clock kickoff Saturday at Ryan Field. Dan, thanks as always, and we'll talk to you again next week before the Cats have their homecoming game against the Bison of Howard.
Absolutely. It should be fun on Saturday.
All right. Thanks. That's Dan Persa. Many thanks to Charlie Mangieri for jumping on with us today. Also, our producer, Jack Heinrich. Thanks to Super Joe Romano for his predictions. And don't forget to join us Saturday. Ted Albrecht will be with me for the pregame at 10:30 Saturday morning, when the Cats take on the Nittany Lions. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back with you next week on Collegiately Speaking.